Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about grain bin preparation. So you may have already put grain in your bins this summer, but for a lot of us in the northern United States, we're thinking a lot about corn and soybean harvest that's coming up, beginning most likely next month. So for many of us, there is time to do something, and we want to talk today about making sure that your grain is going to be in good condition when you put it in this fall. And I think there's no time like this year that this could be tremendously important. And here's why I think that. We rarely talk politics. I hate talking politics about anything. But I will say this. We all are aware right now of what's going on with the U.S. and China and everything else. And here's the way that I look at this on my farm. And I could be dead wrong, but this is the way I'm thinking about it on my farm. In the short term here, commodity prices are hurt, obviously, because China doesn't want to buy anything from us because we don't want to buy anything from China. Or put it another way, we each want different terms on how we're buying things from the other. So in the short term, our commodity prices are hurt. Okay, but let's think about this logically. We know that at some point, sooner or later, we're going to get something worked out with China. It's the biggest economy in the world next to ours. So we'll get something worked out. I just don't know when that's going to be. But think about it. When it does get worked out, what does China really want to buy from us other than ag products? Okay. They really don't want to buy a lot of stuff from us other than ag products and maybe some tech stuff. Okay. So the ag products are probably going to do really well once that deal gets worked out. And if our politicians want the China and U.S. trade thing a little bit more balanced, well, they're probably going to have to buy more ag products than they have been. And they've already been buying a lot. So just think about that. Even if they come back buying as much as they were before, we all know that the markets are going to go up, right? If they come back and buy more than what they were buying before, the markets could go way up. So I'm just looking at this on our farm, and yes, we have a bunch of our grain already sold for this year at a good price, so I'm happy about that. But what we don't have sold, it might have to sit in that bin for 8 months, maybe 12 months. I have a long ways until the harvest of 2019 in October of 2019, so we may need grain sitting in there all the way till September or October of 2019. So I've got to make sure that my grain bin is in great shape. I always want to be thinking about that. So that's what we're going to talk about on today's show. And if you've got a question for us, anything that you think we need to cover more with this topic or anything else, just send us an email at radio@agphd.com, or you can find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So I'll just tell you first, on our farm with our grain bins, we pretty much always fill them up. We have enough storage on the farm, almost every single year for all of our crop. We're pretty fortunate. We got a lot of bins we built over the years, starting with our dad from years ago. And so, you know, with all this on-farm storage and with the tradition of, hey, we have a lot of grain sitting around here for 6, 7, 8 months, you know, we've gotten, I think, fairly good at this whole grain bin preparation thing. And the big thing I always tell people is just make sure that you clean that thing out phenomenally well. We want no dirt left. We want no bugs, no old grain, nothing. Everything's got to be spotless. And also, when you are preparing this grain bin, you want to look for any leaks. You want to fix any, augers. Get all that stuff updated. Now is your opportunity to get a lot of those things taken care of, get it all sealed up good. Then you're in good shape. Then we go in and spray insecticide on the inside. And what we've traditionally done is done malathion. But over the last couple of years, we've been talking with people about, you know what, probably be a good idea to throw another insecticide in. Let's say it's a pyrethroid. Throw a pyrethroid in with your malathion, so you have two modes of action. You'll have less chance for resistance, more chance that you're going to get a good kill, have broad spectrum, leave yourself some residual. All that thing is good. Just make sure that you're following the personal protective requirements that are on the label, following the label in general. So usually we'll go in there, spray the bottom 6-8 feet of the bin around the inside and the floor, and then I tell guys, get out of there as quickly as you can. We don't want to be in there any longer than we have to, and then we want to seal that bin up. And then I will say, too, we also spray the outside around the bin to make sure that we've got any bugs killed there as well. Another thing we do is trim up all the grass around our bins on a regular basis. We're trying to keep the rodent population down as well. So these are some of the steps that we take on our farm. It's been very successful. I just don't want to ever end up in the situation where we have spoiled grain. I don't want to have a situation where we have all kinds of bugs in the bin 8 months down the road, because then you're dealing with some dangerous products, and I don't want to ever have to deal with those.
One of the things that I think of, Brian, and it's good to think about, all right, here's some grain, let's put it in the bin, let's make sure it's safe. I think about it this way, though. We're out in the field. We've got grain. How do I harvest that and not crack it up and get it at the right moisture percentage and do the best job? If we've got good, like let's take corn, for example, good heavy test weight corn, and we harvest it at the proper moisture, we're going to have a lot of kernels that aren't all beat up, and it's going to look good going in. When we end up harvesting things that have sat in the field too long, or we ground them up through the combine, we didn't have stuff set just right, we end up with issues. It's almost impossible to avoid spoilage in those cases. And then the two big things for me are the temperature of the grain and the moisture level that's inside. And if we can keep that moisture level down, you know, depending on where you're at and what your temperatures are going to be outside, if we can keep that moisture level down and we can keep the temperature level down, we just don't have much issue with bugs or with spoilage. Now, we're blessed. We're in the north, and it gets cold. And a lot of times people say, oh, man, how do you guys live up there where when it gets 20 below zero Fahrenheit?
We can survive, but many of the bugs and diseases don't.
Yeah, we go inside where it's warm. You know, it's kind of like being in the south right now, and you say, oh, it's hot and humid every day. Yep, well, you go inside where it's cool. Well, it's just the opposite here. We go inside in the cold weather and warm up, and in the meantime, our grain is cold. We don't have bugs. We don't have spoilage. That really helps. But you got to set the table right with harvest and treat that grain well. We're going to talk today about storing grain effectively and grain bin preparation on today's Ag PhD Radio Show. Stay tuned.
Farmers, you put a lot of money into growing the best crops possible every year, so it only makes sense to make sure every bit of that ends up in your tank. Estes patented concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage. Best of all, they work in all crops. No more changing concaves. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and get what you harvest. That's 765-650-4131.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery on farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
Back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, talking about grain bin preparation. Depending on where you're at and what crops you're growing, you might be right in the middle of this. And we thought it'd be a great time to talk about it. For us, we like to get those bins prepared well in advance and make sure we've eliminated a lot of issues before they pop up. We've got Todd McRoberts with us right now with NK Seeds. Todd, how are you doing today?
Very good, Darren. How are you?
Good, good. All right, so it's fun being out there for harvest, seeing all the great yields, hopefully, in your area, but making sure that that grain stays in great condition until the farmer needs to sell it is super important. So you certainly talk about grain bin prep as one of the things to help farmers out. What do you recommend for them?
Yeah, it's a good point, and I was thinking about this here today, and I cut my teeth shoveling a lot of grain bins out of oats, corn, and soybeans. And,
oh, me too.
It kind of brings back memories of a lot of hard work. But, you know, the one thing you want to do is every year when you're cleaning these bins out after the previous crop year is make sure you get the debris out. And I, you know, traveling across the Midwest this summer, there's a lot of areas that are really droughty. You know, there's going to be some challenges harvesting some of this corn, especially. So a lot of things you're going to see is, you know, I foresee, you know, a lot of cob coming through the stripper plates, small stalk pieces in there, a lot of cracks and splits in this corn. So, I mean, that's the most important thing. If we store this grain for 6 to 8 months and we end up coming into May, June, July, if you don't have good air movement in there, and if you're dropping that corn in at, you know, 14%, 15%, 16%, and maybe you have some condensation in these bins, it's just really important to get those screens clean, make sure your ducts are clean. If you've got maybe a cracked bin floor, a base, you know, you could have some of these slats underneath the, or supports underneath the floors starting to move. So it's just good air movement is really critical in getting that trash out, you know, to that promote insects or promote moisture that could lead to mold. That's really key in these bins right now.
You know, as we think about it, we have no idea what kind of weather we're going to get through harvest. Hopefully, we get some really nice, cool days. And, you know, for us, that's generally not a problem in South Dakota because by October, yeah, it's already starting to get a little cool out there. But in some areas of the country, it's still really, really warm at harvest time. How do you handle that?
Well, that's the thing. If you look at, you know, Missouri south to Texas, you've got high heat from, you know, three-quarter of the year versus upper Midwest, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota. And as you think about, you know, dropping that grain in there, in the upper Midwest, there's a lot of grain dryers that, you know, pull that grain down to 15%, 14.5%. But as you look at these southern areas where they're dropping grain in at maybe 16, 17% and trying to push air through it, I think the most critical thing is that good airflow and just watching, make sure your bin tops are sealed tight. So if you've got maybe some cracks in there, make sure you're caulking those holes. When water can lead to a lot of damage in these bins. And the other thing is, as I travel in the southern areas, there's a lot of ear feeding right now. If you're looking at promoting molds on this grain coming in, you want to have as clean a grain as you can coming into these bins.
Absolutely.
Just to keep it dry.
Yeah, you're right. Some of these bugs, and we were just talking recently with an entomologist talking about the earworm issue and some different things, and wow, you get some feeding on some of these ears. You got mold going there, and it just is a big problem. I talk to people a lot of times about, I get GMO questions and these kinds of things, and that's one of the first things I like to talk about is just keeping those ears clean and what a difference that makes for safety and for grain storage and all these kinds of things. It's a big, big deal. I've been talking with Todd McRoberts with Syngenta NK Seeds. Todd, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you much, Darren. Have a good day.
You too. We have Sean Schaus with us right now with Iowa State. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. And you?
We're doing well because we're not in the grain bin scooping today. Although it's a little bit cooler. It's not the worst condition here. I think my dad always waited till we got really, really hot. Maybe he was just trying to make sure Brian and I got a good workout while we were doing it.
Yeah, he had your long-term health in mind.
Maybe so, but man, you know, grain bins can really be an issue. I mean, we can have problems with mold. We can have problems with rodents. Lots of different things that could come up. How do you advise farmers to get these grain bins set up to avoid all that?
Yeah, one of the things we really try to help people remember to do is to start now to check things out and get things ready before things get really busy at harvest time. So like Todd was saying, checking and making sure everything is clean is a good place to start. And just make sure that you've cleaned out all of the old grain. You never want to put new grain on top of old grain. Make sure everything's as clean as you can get it, including all the transport vehicles, the trucks and wagons, too. Make sure there's no old grain left in them. Clean up around the bin. A good residual insecticide on the clean surfaces then is some extra protection. And if you can, even clean underneath of perforated floors, aeration floors, if you can get to it to clean, because things down in there can harbor insects and lead to infestations later. So cleaning is one of the first steps, and that includes even around the outside of the bin, cleaning up that area, picking up any junk around there, trimming weeds, just makes one less place that rodents can hide and cause problems later. Plus, it makes it a little safer just walking around the area when you get busy and you're in a big hurry, not the time to have something there you got to step over or around.
No, you're absolutely right. That was a big thing on our farm. We always kept it mowed up around the outsides of the bins, and I didn't really understand why. I don't think maybe I was old enough to really fully grasp all that, but my dad sure understood that. Okay, so you talk about all this sanitation, and I think that's super important. The overall maintenance of the bin. Are there some things that every year we should be double checking with?
You bet. Once you've got things kind of cleaned up, then it's a good time to start checking the mechanical equipment, check all of your augers, any other equipment in the bin. If you've got stirring devices in there, make sure that everything's in good physical condition, any bearings that need to be checked, greased, make sure that's taken care of. Check the wiring, make sure that rodents haven't chewed on any wiring, nothing got rubbed as it was unloading, things like that. So make sure everything is in good physical condition, even down to making sure the safety shields are in place so they're ready to protect you when things start running. Making sure everything like that is in good working condition before you start putting grain in the bin. And then even looking at the aeration system, the fans and housings, checking all of those to make sure that everything is ready to run when you want it to. Anything that can go wrong does when you get really busy. So anything you can check out ahead of time is good. And while you're walking around the bin checking those things, check the foundation too. Make sure that it's in good condition. If you've got any air leaks between your floor, if you've got an aeration floor in the bin and you've got any air leaks that are going to let air leak out from under the floor and escape the bin without going up through the grain, that's just wasted electricity and less aeration that you've got in your grain.
Sean, we got about one more minute, but I was just thinking as a kid, all these things that we were doing were on 1,000 bushel bins, 3,000 bushel bins, and now the bins are quite large. How does that change things?
Yeah, just the volume that we're working with here, there's a huge amount of investment in that inventory sitting there in that bin. So keeping that grain in good condition is even more important. There are some things that we didn't deal with that you might on these big bins, things like some sensing equipment in the bin. If you've got temperature cables in there, for example, checking that out, making sure that that system is all working properly so that you don't have to try to fix something after it's covered with grain. But just the sheer size and volume makes things more critical. If something goes wrong, there's a lot more grain investment at risk.
Yeah, that's for sure. There are a lot of dollars in there, no matter what the current price is. I've been talking with Sean Schaus with Iowa State. Sean, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Talking about grain bin preparation on today's program, we'll get into that a little bit more. Also get into some of your questions. We got a number of questions coming in on email today, radio@agphd.com. That's all coming up here in just a minute. We'll be right back after this. Oh, we won't? I thought we were on a commercial.
No, we're not.
Well, I guess we'll talk a little bit more then, Brian.
So, yeah, with the whole grain bin preparation, I guess the big thing that I would say is just you have to do a little work, and it's cleaning things out, it's getting stuff sprayed. So it's not like it's that terribly complicated or anything else. It just takes a little bit of effort.
All right. You know, with the grain bin prep too, Brian, I think the big thing is just you've got to be early on this stuff, because what if you find something? I mean, what if you say, oh, man, I really do need to replace these bearings. They don't have them on hand in town. It might take a little bit of time. And so often it's, well, we're going to put grain in here tomorrow. Let's go take a look. We've got to prepare a little bit further ahead. And then when it comes to, you know, getting rid of some of the problems that are in there, maybe it's a mold or something else. I'd prefer to get that done well in advance too. If you've got a couple of weeks of heat and sun and everything else to really take care of some of those problems for you, it'd be good to get ahead of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to get ahead of any job, but it's like a lot of other things on the farm. We just say, well, I got time. I'll get to that. And it's not a big priority, whatever else. I got other things that are more important to do, so I understand all those things. But yeah, this is it's just really, really important, and you do want to make sure you're getting it done in advance. All right, well, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag right now.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, first question comes from Bradley, and he's in Wisconsin. He said, I've got some nitrate tests that we pulled. The parts per million are generally between 20 and 25. It's a 12-inch soil core that they're pulling. So I'm just curious, with 12 inches of soil, does that mean I take all those parts per million times 4 to get pounds per acre?
Yes.
If so, that means I've got 80 to 100 pounds of nitrogen available there, and they're not recommending at this stage with my yield goals that I apply anymore.
Right, and that's the whole reason why you want to test.
Yep. Also, Brad mentioned that 2018 was his second year in a row coming to the Ag PhD Field Day, and that this year they came because his wife is making them come, or made them come because she really enjoyed 2017's Field Day. Awesome. Hey, thank you so much. Really appreciate that, Brad, and hope to see you again next year.
Hey, you know what you just brought up there, because his wife made them come. Now, it just depends. We have some wives that are super heavily involved on the agronomy side of things, and they really like hearing that. But we also bring in speakers like this year we had the Farm Babe. We had estate planning people there. We had somebody talking about drainage law. We had Molly B. doing some polka. I mean, there are all kinds of other things. And actually, this year was our best kids program ever, too. We had a lot of youth education, educational things toward agriculture. So that was great as well. So we do have things for the whole family, and we try to make sure that we're thinking family all the time. Darren and I both have families, and yes, the kids aren't super excited about ag most days, but you know, you keep feeding them little bits and pieces and it gets better over time.
All right. Got a question here. And this one is a little bit interesting, Brian. All right, this is from Shane. He said, I
go ahead and take your time there, Darren.
I sprayed a product called Resist, which would be the same active ingredients as Canopy. And I've been dinging some beans. And I'm curious, the guys are checking my pH levels, what I should be looking for there.
Does it say the rate?
No. I said, I'm still using Roundup Ready beans. And I guess if I need to switch to something else, what would be a safe and effective burn down type pre-plant herbicide for soybeans? I'm in Illinois.
Okay, so Canopy, just so we're all on the same page here, is Classic and Metribuzin, or at least the active ingredients found in Classic and Metribuzin. Well, what we know about both of those products is they are way more active in high pH soil. Classic, I was just telling this story, I don't know, a day or two ago to somebody about the variability we find in fields. And if you had a real hot spot, we've seen this before, where guys will say, oh yeah, my pH is fine and it's low sevens, or better yet, I mean, it's in the sixes or it's right at seven. And then they realize the next year after using Classic, they have dead corn. And they go, well, you know, there's a problem with the Classic or this or that or something else is going on. And you soil test right there and you say, well, you have an 8.2 pH here. Okay. That's terrible. We know that classic's a major problem in an 8.2 pH. So our assumption is it's probably not the classic because soybeans are pretty tolerant of classic. But soybeans are not super tolerant with metribuzin. And we see this in high pH soils around the country. And we just tell guys immediately, if your soil pH is over 7.4, we want to cut that rate of metribuzin down from a third of a pound to a sixth of a pound. And quite frankly, you might have to cut it more than that if your pH is above 8. You can still use metribuzin. We like metribuzin, but it's simply not going to work the same way. So you have to reduce the rate, and you can still get the same control. So I'm still going to tell you, keep metribuzin in there. I don't know why you're using the classic, though. I mean, it's an ALS herbicide, so all these ALS-resistant weeds, you're not going to control them. So what we generally talk about in soybeans is the three pre's. The three pre's include metribuzin, a yellow, that's either Sunland, Treflan, or Prowl. Prowl would be the only one you can use in no-till. Treflan and Sunland have to be instantly incorporated. And then the third thing would be either Valor or Authority, one of the PPOs. So use those three pre's. That's going to give you great control. Yes, you still have to be careful with that metribuzin rate, but I mean, that's the best possible way you can go for the most amount of broadleaves and have good crop safety, again, as long as you're using the right rate of metribuzin.
All right. Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Let's get back to the phone lines here. Got Eli Troyer with us right now. Really appreciate having you on, Eli, with all your experience on grain bin prep. This is an easy topic for you.
Well, it should be after that's all I've done for the last 40 years plus, I guess.
You know, you've seen everything that could go wrong, I would assume, over the years on different farms. What are some of the things that you say are just absolutely critical as you go into harvest season?
A couple things, I guess, is to prep your bins to make sure the hardware is in good shape. It doesn't need to be repaired. Floors, doors, and roof vents and leaks and that type of stuff. But probably the biggest thing that I've seen over the years is guys trying to understand the limits of a bin based on whether it's a storage bin or a drying bin.
Okay.
Trying to put grain in a bin that's got too much moisture in it, and they're trying to take moisture out by running the fans on the bin when they don't have big enough airflow, and they run into all kinds of problems with that. Probably the most misunderstood thing is putting, particularly with automatic controls on a grain bin, which we've used in the past. They think they put something like that on it, it makes a storage bin into a drying bin, which is a big, big super no-no.
Yeah, getting sufficient airflow is really critical, and this has got to be different to some degree based on which crop you're putting in and so forth. But man, some of these bins, Eloy, they're so big right now. What do you see in terms of airflow? What are good guidelines that farmers should look at?
Well, if you're trying to remove moisture from the grain, which would be a case for taking soybeans in a bin.
Oh, yep. We're having a little problem there with that connection. We'll pick that up again here in just a second. Apologize about that. Go ahead. Let's talk more about that, Darren. What was the next thing you wanted to get into?
Well, you know, when you think about that sufficient airflow through a bin, that's the big thing. If you want to move the needle, I mean, it's one thing to say, well, I got a tiny little fan blowing air through, but it's not going to get the job done very quickly. You've got to have sufficient airflow to get that going. Eli, I think we got you back now.
Yes.
What are the guidelines? How do you get the right amount of airflow moving through?
If you're drying or changing the moisture of the grain in a bin, I like to see 1 CFM per bushel airflow, and basically what that limits you to is 20 foot of grain depth, and 1 CFM if you have a 20 horsepower fan or 210 horsepower fans, they're good for 20,000 bushels in a bin. So depending on number of bushels you're looking for will determine the diameter of the bin, because you're limiting the depth to keep your static pressure under control. Now, if you're going in a bin with grain that's already dry and you're going into storage, that changes the whole thing. You're only looking maybe a tenth of CFM per bushel airflow when the bin is full, but that's air to only aerate the grain and keep it in condition, basically controlling the temperature during the storage period.
Sure,
but if
sure.
you're removing moisture or adding, changing the moisture, then you need more airflow, because the other thing that enters into that is your shelf life of the grain itself. Based on the temperature and the moisture of the grain will determine how much shelf life you have, and you need to get the grain drier or cooler to extend the shelf life. So, and the crops are different. Absolutely, Brian, you said depends on what kind of crop you've got and what the moisture is. All those are factors that will enter into the equation.
Well, you think about it, a lot of times at harvest time, it might be really warm out there and you want to cool that grain as quickly as you can in addition to pulling some moisture out of it. We're not messing around here. You got to have plenty of power to move air through there to get it done quickly, because you may only have a day or 2 days or a week, depending on where you're at and what the temperatures are, to get it going before you're going to start to see some spoilage.
Well, the other thing that's very, very important, and a lot of guys don't have this, is a control of some sort of monitor on the fan itself that will measure temperature and the relative humidity. So rather than turning a fan on and leaving it on through the high and the low temperature, high and low humidity, you only want to run the fan if and when you're able to capture that air that is able to get the temperature down if you're trying to cool it. So having a switch, and I have a new product that I've just come out with, which is a low-cost temperature humidity switch that goes on a fan motor that you can, and an app that goes on your smartphone that you can set your limits where you want the fan to run. So when you gain temperature, and shutting off when you're out of the window, you're not losing what you've gained by putting in, and that's probably gets more people in trouble by running those fans, turning them on and letting them run.
Yes.
Time. You're not only doing improper to the grain, but you're wasting a lot of money on electricity, particularly when you have big enough fans on your bin to be able to do the job. You're talking bigger horsepower motors, and that it takes electricity to run those fans. And if running them at the wrong time, you're doing damage or putting moisture in the grain or taking more moisture out, or it's very inefficient to run it without some kind of controls on the fan motors.
Well, there's no doubt you're doing this right at harvest time. You're super busy, probably not getting hardly any sleep. And to think that, I'll pay attention and get that shut off just at the right moment, there's no way. There's no way you're going to do it without controls.
No.
Eli, where can you find more information about that?
On our website, Steps GMS is my new company. Steps, STEPS, GMS is Grain Management Services. New service that I offer along with the new product, and it's on our website. If you go to Twitter, I've got a lot of stuff I'm posting on Twitter, so there's and that's on Steps GMS under my own Eli Troyer would be the name you're looking for.
Very good, Eli. StepsGMS.com. Eli Troyer, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back after this.
With DuPont Approach Prima Fungicide, there's a difference. A real difference you can actually see in the health of your crops and the health of your bottom line. From superior coverage to more reliable performance, Approach Prima delivers long-lasting results against hard-to-control diseases like frog eye leaf spot, while the preventive and curative action gives you the application flexibility you need for greater yield potential. So see the difference of Approach Prima for yourself. Visit approachprima.dupont.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Zero. Zilch. Zip. That's the total cases of resistance documented with Manzate ProStick. That's right, zero, zilch, zip. Not all fungicides can say this, but Manzate ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Manzate ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever, but disease can stand in the way. Like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual-mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today, and getting a lot of questions in via email, radio@agphd.com. I want to get to another one of those. Got one from Brad here, and Brad is in New South Wales, Australia. So we've been following your show for a couple of years now. My son came up to your field day this year. Got a couple soil tests I want you to take a look at. The cation exchange capacity ranges from 48 to 53, and the base saturation for potassium is only at 0.6 to 0.8%. You followed that with four exclamation marks, Brian. As I can tell, that's really concerning to Brad. He said, how much potassium can I safely put on per application of either potassium sulfate or potash? We're raising soybeans, corn, sunflower, sorghum. Yeah. Oh, and he also makes a comment. We can place fertility down on 30-inch rows to a depth of 12 inches, and we're currently paying about $650. I'm not sure if that's U.S. No, it's Australian dollars. Well, the potassium sulfate costs about 50% more. He said they're getting 28 to 30 inches of rain per year. About 60% of that comes in the summer. So they're getting about not too much different moisture, I guess, than we are, a little bit more. What do you think about that, Brian? We've put out some big rates of potassium before. When you get a less than 1% base saturation potassium on a 50 CEC, it's going to take a lot of potassium to get you up in that 4 to 6%.
Right. That's the whole problem. And here's the thing that I've been talking about a lot over the last couple of years with a lot of people is we got to start thinking about fertilizer as a long-term investment instead of as a short-term expense. When I put out, we've done some stuff where we're putting out, well, we've gone as high as 1,400 pounds of potash per acre, but I'm going to say 2 years ago, the average application on our farm was over 500 pounds. Well, there's no possible chance I'm going to use 500 pounds in 1 year of potash, and it's probably going to take 3 to 4 years to use that much. So why would I look at that and say, okay, let's just say I spent $100,000 on potash. Well, I get that you get to expense it off your tax return and all that kind of thing this year, but we're going to reap the benefits of that for several years. So we just have to think about that a little different. Now, if you rent the ground, that's a whole different deal. You should not be doing something like that unless you have some type of long-term arrangement with your landlord. I did have one landlord, one of the last pieces of ground we picked up here over the last few years, and I looked at the soil test and I go, oh my gosh, we would have to do a lot here. So unless you want to give me like a 10 or 20 year contract, which I don't think you do, are you willing to spend some money up front? And they were. And quite frankly, I'm fine paying more rent. I don't mind that if they've got the fertility built up. But what I can't have is me going out spending an extra $50 an acre on fertilizer that somebody else gets to benefit from the following years. So that's what we have to always be thinking about. How long is that fertilizer going to last? When I think about phosphorus, I think about potassium, zinc, many of the micronutrients, they're pretty stable in the ground. The only way they're leaving that land is if you have erosion, which hopefully we don't, or if the crop at some point uses it. Okay, so I mean, theoretically, well, here, I want you to think about this. Have you ever had a piece of ground where grandpa put some manure out and you can still find that spot today? Think about that. So just think about how long that fertility lasted in the soil. So once you start realizing that, you go, oh, yeah, okay. So the fertility thing's a long-term investment. And by the way, I'll bet you that where Grandpa spread manure, that's some pretty good ground today, isn't it? Okay, so when I talk to farmers all the time who tell me, I want to leave my land in better condition for future generations. Are you serious about that, or are you just saying that? If you're serious about it, then sure, let's work on a build program. You're not going to want to do that in 1 year, but let's work on a build program over the next 5 years to get that fertility level up where it actually needs to be. And now it's going to be in good shape for a long time. And when your grandkids are out there farming it, they're going to go, boy, I'm sure glad Grandpa did this because I have some awfully good crops here where he fixed that ground 40 years ago.
Yeah, I think one of the messages at the field day, as it almost always is this year, was take a small amount of ground, do some of these things that seem a little bit radical. And you know what? If you lose a little bit of money on a small amount of ground, well, no big deal.
No. I'm going to disagree with you 100% because you can be wrong. Here's the point. There's no wrong with this. This is something that's proven.
I agree.
It's proven. Somebody just figured out fertilizer will last many years? That's exactly my point there. You already have the data you need on your farm by just thinking about where did Grandpa spread his manure and how good is that ground today?
I'm not disagreeing with that, but what I'm saying is, let's just say that 500 pounds, you know for sure 500 pounds is safe. That's great. And you say, I wonder what would happen if I put 1,000 out.
Well, yes.
And you take a few acres and you put 1,000 out, and then you say, oh, okay, let's see if it worked.
For crop safety purposes, yes. But I thought you were talking about building the ground. We know.
No.
That stuff's not going anywhere if it's heavy ground, like you said, 50 CEC.
Yeah.
And especially, like, I look at our land where we don't get much for rainfall. I mean, there's no possible chance we're leaching potassium out of our soil.
Okay, here's the other thing is, you know, and this is really Brad's concern, and that's why I said it that way, Brian, is that he's just concerned about what rate. He knows he needs to put it out there. He's just not sure how much he can put on safely. Now, he says he can put it down to 12 inches. What do you think about that? I sure like deep placement. If you're banding it, can you do that in addition to the broadcast? You're kind of putting it in a couple different spots?
Yeah, but then you got to be much more careful. See, anytime you start talking about banding excessive rates, now we've got a real problem with crops, or we could have a real problem with crop safety. That's why whenever we talk on the show here about a build program, we're talking about doing that very carefully. And we usually say, hey, you want to broadcast that. So if you want to go in, well, even just look at the stuff that I just sent out this morning to you and our guys in the farm about some of the stuff I want to get done this fall. And what did I say about with the strip till? I said, okay, the top 6 inches, we can build that all up right now immediately. And we can till that in, no problem. But for the deeper stuff, what are we going to have to do? That 6 to 12 inch range, we got to do that over a 4 year period. We can't have a 1 year build program because it'll get too hot in that one spot. Plus, since it doesn't move around in the soil and we're injecting it down that deep, I want it in 4 different spots. I don't want it all in one spot, just so I have a better chance for recovery at some point in the future, wherever my roots may happen to be. So I want to build that whole soil, make the whole soil healthier, and I absolutely can do that. I know how to do that, but it's going to just take some time. And I like the time part, too, from the financial standpoint. So I look at it as I'm going to invest some this year, some the next year, some each of the next 4 years. Okay, well, now I'm in pretty good shape. I spread it out over a little bit of time, and that I can handle.
Yeah, in the meantime, I'd use something. Well, and I don't know what products are available where you're at in Australia, but for us, we use a highly available liquid K called Sure K to get product into the plant right away. And then give some time for us to get that soil built up with our potash. Hey, thanks a lot. Really appreciate the question, Brad, and hope your son enjoyed the field day. I got one from Travis. He said, I am a crop insurance agent out of northeast Nebraska, southeast South Dakota. I'm wondering about hail insurance, and when our corn yields are on track to be above what our guarantee levels are, do you think that hail insurance would be a good thing to buy, and is it something that you would normally buy for your farm?
Well, I would say this. What we've tried to, we actually don't even have crop insurance on the farm anymore. And the reason why, part of the reason why, is because we have spread things out so much in terms of our land compared to what we used to have. So if we had everything really concentrated in a small area, well, now hail's a really big risk for me. Now that we're spread out really almost from 20 miles, almost 20 miles from one end to the other, I figure the odds are much slimmer that I'm going to have some hail event or some tornado or something that's going to come through and wipe all that out. So I have a lot better chance. And everybody just has to kind of run the math. Is it going to work or is it not? But no, we're currently not taking hail. But especially if I was a younger farmer, I would really look seriously at it.
We'll be right back after this short break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from HiPro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. HiPro, helping you spray better.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC miticide. Just one application by Grounder Air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
With Preaxor Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time here, answering your questions. You can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Got one from Jason here, Brian, and this one is interesting because we get a question like this every so often. Jason said, I've got a master's in mechanical engineering and an MBA. I've been in the oil and gas industry for 15
years.
Wait,
we don't get a lot of people saying that. But anyway,
no,
go ahead.
Not that. But he said, I'm considering a career change, moving back closer to family and looking at agronomy as a potential position for me. I looked into a CCA as a sign of competence and dedication to the change, but they require an ag degree and 4 years of experience. Yeah. So obviously I'm not going to be able to get that right away. What do you think about a move into being an agronomist? Is there a way to get started, or am I basically going to have to start at the bottom in some company and work my way up?
Pretty much. So the thing is, when you mentioned CCA, farmers, I, as a farmer, I will just say, for me, I don't care if the person has a CCA or not. I don't care if they have an ag degree or not. I just care about, do they know what they're talking about? Are they helping me make money on my farm? So if you are really farmer focused, you're going to do everything you possibly can to learn as much so you can help the farmer make the best decisions when it comes to everything from seed, crop protection products, even on the equipment side, all those things. You have to know a lot as an agronomist, but if you are dedicated to it, you can learn it all, and you don't have to go to college to do that. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying college is bad. That's great if you can go to college. But at this point, yeah, if you just want to go in and work under another agronomist for a few years and pick it up, you certainly can do that. I will say this. For me, so I went to college for 4 years for ag. I worked for FMC, actually, interning and actually worked for them full-time after college for like a year and a half. And then I went into an agronomy role, and it still took me a couple of years after that. And, you know, I'd kind of grown up in this thing, and I mean, I'd spent so many hours working in agronomy and crops and learning about all these products, and it still took me a couple of years after that. So, I mean, it was a lot of training. And every day I'm learning something. That's one of the reasons I love doing the radio show, because we get all these questions in from people, and most of them I have experience with, I can answer, but some of them challenge both Darren and me, and then we also say, hey, let's try that out on our farm and all our research stuff. We do research in several different states, and let's find out the answer to that. And then also, where I will tell you as a young agronomist, how I learned more than anything is I just talked to farmers. They educated me more than any professor ever could, because they had real world experience, and they're gonna tell me right away, because their money is at stake.
Yeah, if it was me and I really wanted to get into agriculture, I'd work for a farmer that's probably towards retirement age that really could use the help. And I would try and learn everything I could. If you had a progressive farmer that you could work with that way, that would be one thing you could do. But honestly, if I had a master's in mechanical engineering and an MBA, I would utilize those skills. I'd move close to a decent-sized city. And I'm sure you could find a job in that profession as well. Wouldn't necessarily be oil and gas, but
for what he wants to do, though, I wouldn't do that. I would work for a consultant, and I'd be out in fields every day, and I'd be the scout for the consultant, and I'd do that every day for a couple of years. And
be
in
some
addition,
long hours, but you learn a lot quickly.
Well, that's how you're gonna do it with anything. I mean, there's no job out there that's easy unless you put the hours in.
All right, great question, Jason. Good luck to you. I don't envy how much work and change that's going to be for you, but by the same token, it could be pretty exciting as well. I get a question from Anthony, and he said, I'm interested in buying crop protection products online, but I'm wondering, is there a big advantage doing this outside of price versus working with my local supplier? He mentioned he looked at one online source, and he thought their prices were actually high. I guess we do get questions about this as well, Brian. How do you handle that?
Well, yeah, I'm. You can do stuff online if you want to, but I'm skeptical a lot of times. You wonder where the stuff came from, what's the service going to be, what kind of advice you're going to get, those types of things. So most of the time, what I've found is, if a deal seems like it's too good to be true, that's generally speaking the case. So you can find plenty of good deals from a lot of local or relatively local retailers that are out there and work with somebody that you can trust, somebody that knows your farm. That a lot of times is worth more than anything. But yeah, I mean, to each his own. If you want to do stuff online, you certainly can. The future is not online like it is with a lot of other things in our society. Yep, online's great. I order a lot of things online for me personally, but when it comes to my farm, no way. I got hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake. I can't get the wrong thing. I can't have bad product. I can't take chances when I start talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay, we got a comment from Joe, and he said, you talked about how to build topsoil on one of your shows. Well, I think all the topsoil blew away in the 30s because we took grass off the land and we don't have buffalo or cattle roaming it. The grasslands have the most topsoil because of the large herd animals around the world, is his opinion.
Well, it's not because of the animals, but it is because there is crop growing there, and it's no-till. So if you want to build topsoil, then you reduce tillage. But to say that it all, well, for, okay, so there are a lot
of statements. It's simplifying yes, it way too
and,
far.
And all blew away in the 30s. Obviously, it didn't all blow away, but was there a lot of erosion then? Yes, absolutely. And once farmers realized, ooh, we can't have that, they changed a lot of their practices. If you look at what we have for soil erosion in the United States today, it is drastically reduced from even 20 years ago. So we're doing a lot of good things, but here's the deal. Sure, we can talk about, all right, we'll solve the erosion problem by eliminating all tillage. We'll just put everything into pasture. We'll do nothing but raise livestock. But how are we going to feed the world doing that? Not going to happen.
Yep. Thanks for the feedback, Joe. I really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.